Hey everyone, thanks for listening to the Pepcast. We talk a lot about mental health and mental illness in this podcast, including suicide and depression. And the topics may be upsetting to some. We are in no way medical professionals. We're speaking of our own experiences with mental health, which may or may not be similar to yours. We are in no way trying to make light of your or anyone else's situation. Please, if you or anyone you know is seeking or in need of help, please call the CAPS number at 831-459-2628 to schedule an appointment. Or, if in crisis, the CAPS team will be able to assist, even after hours. There is also the National Suicide and Crisis Lifeline with a new, easy-to-remember number, 988. 24 hours, 7 days a week, you are not alone. Stay safe and enjoy the show. Welcome to the Pepcast. A little information about PEP, or the Peer Education Program. It's a student-led group focused on promoting mental health awareness and reducing stigma around mental health treatment. Working heavily with CAPS to let people know about all the resources that UCSC provides for its students, from counseling, weekly groups, and workshops about how to better manage the stress of college, CAPS has a lot of resources to offer. And much of it for free, I may add. So if you want more information about all the things that CAPS has to offer, please go to caps.ucsc.edu to find out more. Hey everyone, welcome to our last Pepcast. And this week we are going to have a super special guest. And can you introduce yourself, Sophie?
Absolutely. My name is Sophie Hawkins. I use she, her pronouns. And I am a psychological doctoral intern at CAPS, where I work at PEP and with the peer educators. And I also see students. And I'm so excited to be here.
That's good to hear.
Yeah.
So I just like to start off with a simple question at first. So what's new with you, Sophie?
Yeah, I am about to graduate from my doctoral program, which is super cool. I've been going at this for 5 years. I just finished my dissertation, which is on the experience of fatness in the therapy room. And from a body liberation standpoint, I also just ate a burrito in the car and it was a complete disaster. So that's also what's new with me.
Yeah. Eating food in the car is always has the possibility for a lot of mess.
Absolutely. Especially when you're eating it while looking for parking on the campus.
Yeah. That's a whole nother story.
Yeah.
That can get into a mess itself.
Yeah.
So I guess I'll just start with one of my first questions I like to ask people, which is going to be a little different for you, but maybe it'll be the same.
Yeah.
It's the reason why you joined PEP or wanted to engage in mental health advocacy. And
absolutely.
Obviously you're very engaged in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I, part of my work as a doctoral intern is, making sure that I do outreach and make sure that services seem accessible. And, when I was an undergrad, I worked in a similar role that you're in, which is, being a peer educator. And I know how important that is to have students at the forefront of services, because y'all know better than anyone else what it feels like to, to be in this system and how hard it can be.
Mm-hmm.
And also I remember how hard it was for me too. I remember that I didn't ever access CAPS at, I went to Virginia Tech for undergrad.
Okay.
I didn't know those services existed. And so it's just so important for people who are having a hard time to know what's out there for them. And that's why I just get so excited about tabling and podcasts and all of these things. 'Cause those are the things that students interact with, not like these brochures and calling the number, right? So I think that's the main reason. But I also just love hanging out with y'all. I feel like a college kid still. I kind of still am.
Yeah.
Some ways. But y'all are so smart and cool and fun. So it's just been a really nice break from some of the more heavy work that I have to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And speaking of that heavy work, mm-hmm. Why did you want to get into becoming a therapist? Because I know a lot of people in PEP right now mm-hmm. are psych majors, and mm-hmm. a decent amount of them are going towards the field of being a counselor or being mm-hmm. something very into the mental health field.
Yeah, that's such a good question. I think there's two parts of it. I'll start with the more like academic part and then do the more personal part. But I was working as an undergrad researcher, I was doing a lot of work with PhD students for psychology.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really research heavy. Like, we were doing statistics and graphs and numbers. And I remember I had the opportunity to observe a session actually while I was doing that work. And I was so interested. I thought about it all week. I was like, that was the coolest thing I've ever seen. It was just a therapist talking to someone. And it's what I have just been shooting towards ever since. Like, it just is fun and it comes mm-hmm. naturally to me. And it's just so interesting. So that's kind of how that happened academically. But personally, I went through some really hard times throughout high school and college. Mm-hmm. I've struggled with depression. I have ADHD. I have had some really hard experiences that I've gone through. And I know how important it was for me to get therapy and how much that relationship, those relationships I formed with therapists mm-hmm. meant to me. So just wanting to do something like that, like giving back, helping people through similar things that I've been through.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So what about you? Do you want to be a therapist?
No, in fact, I know I'm definitely the only philosophy major in PEP.
Mm-hmm.
And I am one of the ones that don't want to be a therapist. I've thought about it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I never really went through, I never went to therapy as a kid when I really actually needed it.
Mm-hmm.
But, later on, I learned the value of it. I've went to therapy, and I will probably go to therapy again.
Yeah.
But over time, I sort of figured that I want to do something that is more general,
mm-hmm,
that
mm-hmm.
could help a mm-hmm. lot of people it would be less effective than being a therapist.
Mm-hmm.
This is how I put it. I want to do something that will help a lot of people a small amount
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
instead of being a therapist, which is helping a small amount of people mm-hmm. a large amount.
That's a really good way of putting it. Absolutely. I've had to come to terms with that for sure. Like, you know, I may help hundreds of people throughout my life, which is really cool. But in terms of how big the world is, that's relatively small.
Yeah.
I do like to think about therapy of how if I'm working with one person, I kind of see the web of their family and mm-hmm. their partners and friends that are also getting to experience them in a more wholesome way because they're getting support. So maybe hundreds of people, but then the web of healing kind of spreads. But I totally get that. And therapy is pretty intense. It's a pretty intense field to be in. But I really enjoyed talking to you about how philosophy and psychology overlaps because that stuff is neat.
Mm-hmm. I think I want to touch back on
mm-hmm.
You said you had therapy when you were younger.
Mm-hmm.
So what was sort of the start of like starting therapy when you were younger? Like, did you advocate for yourself, or was it something your parents had you go to, or it's like what sort of got you your first foray into mental health
absolutely
and taking care of it?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think this is a place where a lot of people start, which is I was struggling in school. I don't remember the first time that my parents really noticed it, but yeah, I started being put in remediated classes and things like that. I had trouble reading, and I got tested first. And I remember going for my ADHD testing when I was maybe like in sixth grade, and they gave me all these blocks and things, pictures, and I was like, this is cool. I did indeed have ADHD because I was more into looking at the pictures in the box, right? But from there, I always found like comfort in those types of spaces.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, I went through some really hard times in high school. And I remember, you know, just talking to my mom about feeling really sad. Full disclosure, my mom's mom, so my grandma is a therapist.
Okay.
So there was a little bit of understanding of that in my family. It wasn't something that we never talked about. But I would say from like, you know, senior year of high school, that's when I got back into it again. So I didn't have therapy from like, you know, the time I got tested to senior year in high school. And then just, I've just continually just been interested in my thought processes, and therapy can be really fun. It can be like, ooh, what does that mean? I wanna explore that a little more. And it can be really hard. There was times I did not want to go. So I think I always kinda liked it. Mm-hmm. I think that's the start of getting in there. Right?
Okay.
Yeah.
And I feel like I wanna touch upon the your family. Your grandma being a therapist, because I don't want to repeat my stories that I've told in the other episodes, but I basically figured I maybe had ADHD around my third or maybe my fourth, fifth grade, because I would get in trouble a lot around things that were very synonymous with ADHD.
Absolutely.
And I basically was just like, what's wrong with me? So I looked online, I found the symptoms and all that. I did my research.
In fifth grade? Badass. Okay, keep going.
Yeah, I like to read a lot. Or I like to research.
Yeah, yeah.
But when I brought it up to my parents, my dad was pretty much very dismissive. He was like, no, you don't. It's like, it was basically mind over matter. It's like, if you will it, then it won't be a problem.
Absolutely.
And that was pretty much an issue, because after that, all of my other problems that I had, like depression, anxiety, I didn't even really bring it up, because I figured that it wasn't a problem, and I didn't have necessarily a label to put to it.
Absolutely.
So I just accepted it as part of who I am, instead of something that can be changed.
Yeah, that's a, you know, that is a story I hear a lot as a therapist of, I've always had this thing. I've always been anxious. I've always had trouble focusing. When I ask how long have you known that? They say like exactly what you said, like third, fourth grade. But there's a way that we kind of swipe away what kids say or teens say about how they're feeling. And so I think that's a real issue of how do we make it more accessible to younger folks and not just purely have to go through parents, right? I mean, but I imagine that was really hard to have like a known thing that was going on with you and not having the support. I had the same thing though. I got in trouble all throughout high school. for balancing books on my head and chewing on my pencil and, you know, speaking out when I shouldn't have. So I totally relate to you about that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think since I have you here, like as a person who's working as a therapist, do you have any like tips or ways to go about sort of introducing mental health in a I don't want to say non-confrontational, but more of a open-minded way to people who may not be immediately dismissive of mental health, but see it as more of a, I guess, choice or something you can overcome on pure willpower?
Yeah, yeah. That's a really good point. I mean, there are so many different reasons why people choose not to go to therapy, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it might be cultural. It might be they don't think it will work. Their problems aren't big enough. Their problems are too small or too big. Did I already say all of that? Yes. Anyway. But I think the way to talk or to start conversations about mental health, and I think this is something I've tried to do in my life, is ask a lot of questions to folks that you're talking to. Share your own stories, right? Mm-hmm. If we can like open these conversations up and make it more normal to talk about how we're feeling inside, I think we'll all be able to support each other in doing that. I hear that so much with the students I've met with throughout my training, which is I feel like I'm the only one who's feeling this way, or no, I don't really talk to my friends about this. I don't think they'd get it. And I think that's where it starts. It starts in like our personal conversations, not necessarily a big movement or like a thing to say, but just feeling more comfortable and open to talking about those things like we're doing right now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, what would be a way to sort of introduce the prospect of getting therapy to, let's say, parents who might not really know much about it or agree with it? Like, a lot of college students here may be able to, like, get help on their own right now, but maybe they have younger siblings or... siblings of friends who may like really have those issues, who want to go to therapy or may need the help, but their parents are just completely dismissive of it.
Absolutely. That's a really good question. And of course, there's lots of different factors that could be impacting it. So I'm going to speak like kind of generally. I think it's always helpful when someone's denying you something or someone's really against something to understand why, to understand what their fear is. I think when we start to have conversations about that, you find out that they're all kind of assumptions rather than based in fact or reality, right? Like, I'm just scared. You go into a room and you talk to someone, what, why? But what's the worst thing that can happen from that? If you feel comfortable, or if people feel comfortable asking their parents that, like, what is the fear? What are you worried about? And then asking like, what's the best outcome? What if I get help? What if I start to feel better? But yeah, that's a really complicated question, because I think there's so many different factors that are at play. One thing that I see the most is like these cultural understandings of therapy, and that it might equal weakness, or that it's, you know, you don't share your business with someone who's not in your family. And so just, like I said, having those conversations, talking about what it would feel like to feel better with your parents. Because I think, at the end of the day, I think that's what most, I'm going to put quotes around that, most like loving parents would want for their people to feel better. Yeah. Does anything come up for you? Any ideas?
Yeah, going... specifically for me, I noticed that when I finally started getting therapy and getting on meds, my dad finally talked about his struggles with mental health, because apparently depression runs in his family, mm-hmm. but they lived in the South at the time and were very poor. They didn't have much. Mm-hmm. And so the solution basically was to deal with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you work hard and you deal with it. And that's all he knew. That was his solution to the struggles of having depression. Mm-hmm. And finally, when I started getting therapy and started getting on meds, he decided that he'll try to do that.
Wow.
And he even told me afterwards that, wow, I'm feeling a lot better. It's like the medication's working. Like, it's a good thing to talk to someone. And he was saying that it was good for him, but initially his only knowledge of mental health was, well, some people are crazy, mm-hmm. and some people have like this other thing that you can control by overpowering it.
Absolutely. That is such a cool story. I think that's exactly what we were talking about earlier about these conversations. Like, how do we get people into therapy? It's about talking about our own experiences, mm-hmm. and you know, how we've found healing through talking about mental health, not necessarily even therapy, but just talking about it. But what a lovely story. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one last question I want to ask, mm-hmm. and pertain to this. What would you say to someone who is only preconception about therapy is, they're just going to tell me what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I already know what I need to do. I need to do these things and these things that will like help me feel better and fix my problems.
Yeah.
But I don't need someone to tell me, oh, you have to do this or you have to do that.
Yeah, that's a really good question, because that is so not what I think therapy feels like. Of course, some therapists may, you know, go that route by giving advice. But I know that in my training, the way that I think about it is, it's not me sitting across from someone,
mm-hmm.
and telling them what to do. We may be sitting across from each other in reality, but the way that I picture it is, I'm sitting next to someone and we're looking at, like, say, like a big, you know, poster of their life and all the moving parts, and two minds are better than one a lot of, mm-hmm. times, right? Like, I like to help people get organized and all of those things that are swirling around in their head. I also think that a big part of the work we do is empowering people. Maybe they know what they need to do, but they don't feel like they can do it for some reason, mm-hmm. or they don't trust in themselves, don't believe themselves, don't have the self-compassion that they need. And it really helps to just have someone sitting next to you being like, you can do it. What's stopping you from doing it? Can we work on that? Can we talk through that? So I never see it as advice giving or telling someone what to do, more so just sitting next to them and looking at it together, so mm-hmm. he doesn't feel so lonely.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, mm-hmm. I guess this will be a little different too.
Yeah.
I usually ask, what is your biggest stressor in college?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess you can answer that from your time in college.
Absolutely.
And, well, your time still now, since you're a graduate, mm-hmm. student. But also, what have you noticed is a lot of college students' biggest stressors?
Yeah, I mean, I relate to a lot of the students I talk to, because one thing they say is, like, I don't have enough time to balance it all. If I do really well on my coursework, then I don't have enough time to hang out with friends. If, mm-hmm. I'm hanging too much out with friends, then I don't have time to maybe make a meal that's good, or, like, or, you know, do all of the things equally in a balanced way. That is so hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think my personal biggest struggle has been time. Like, I consistently feel like there's not enough time in the day, in the week. in the quarter. So I think that's the biggest one. And that's one that I see a lot. I think it's like, it's hard to balance it all. And I, you know, in learning, you know, going through undergrad and going into grad school, I think one of the biggest things I learned is to not do everything perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
That I have to pick and choose how much effort I put into certain things. Some assignments I look at, I'm like, I'm just going to try to finish this in 2 hours and be done. But the time piece is the one that I come back to.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ask me a second part of that question?
The question was, what is your biggest college stressors, and what have you noticed that students' biggest college stressors are?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I think the time piece, like we said, and then I think it's a lot of it has to do with making friends.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's a lot of students who see everyone walking around, and it seems like everyone's doing okay, and they all have their friends,
mm-hmm.
But they don't have friends. And if I could wave a wand and have all of those people in the same room to hang out, it would be so cool, because there's so many people on campus who are feeling that way. And it just takes like sitting down and talking to someone and not assuming that they have their group of friends all figured out and that they're feeling super connected. This mm-hmm. is a really hard experience. Like, everyone here isn't from here, right? They're all just coming in. So I think that's one I see a lot, and one I relate to too. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember back in my freshman year, I had a tough time making friends.
Mm-hmm.
Or I wouldn't say I had a tough time making friends. I would say I had a tough time making friends that I could connect with on a emotional level.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I even remember like walking around one time just being like, there are so many people around, like I could go to a party right now,
mm-hmm.
but I don't want to.
Yeah.
I don't want to interact with people that I am only gonna
mm-hmm.
talk to on a surface level.
Yeah. And I just
felt like I didn't have any real friends. I just had like basically Facebook friends.
Yeah, that's it. That's the common thing that I see. And I also know that making friends is really hard. Making true real friends, like you're saying, mm-hmm. is really rare. You know, not saying that not everyone has that, but it takes time and a lot of effort, and like that's a hard part about being in college as like a really emotional person or someone mm-hmm. who's really deep and wants that deep connection. It takes time to find that.
Yeah, and I think that's why we have a lot of clubs here.
So
people can find people with similar interests.
Absolutely. Like even PEP, you know, just being in a space, a shared space with a shared goal, I think is just, it makes me feel better. And I'm not an undergrad here, but like I leave Friday afternoons, which is when we have our PEP meetings, by the way, everybody. just feeling a little more connected and happy, and you know, it's not that we're staying in contact every day or mm-hmm. anything like that, but it's, I know I'm gonna have that space. So I really recommend groups and clubs and all those types of things to folks who are feeling that way.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that leads into another question.
Mm-hmm.
A follow-up. Do you have any tips or tricks or skills that or just advice for people going through some of those stressors, like time management, the lack of real mm-hmm. connection, like stuff like that?
Absolutely. This is one that I talk about all the time, but it's self-compassion.
Mm-hmm.
I found this book actually like right when I was in my senior year undergrad. It's Self-Compassion by Dr. Kristen Neff. And it talks about how we are so, am I allowed to curse? Frickin' mean.
I think so.
We are so bleep mean to ourselves because, you know, we, a lot of times, like you were talking about even within your family, like we are taught that if we just push through, if we keep going, like, we'll get to the other side. But I actually think it's the self-compassion that matters. If we can be kind to ourselves during all of the stressors, mm-hmm. When we're feeling like we're disconnected or we don't have enough time, just really understanding, like, I'm in college right now. This is really hard. And this isn't a me thing. Everyone here struggles in their own ways. Mm-hmm. And, like, how can I be nice to myself? That really made a huge shift in my life. And one way that I do that is just maybe, like, imagining I'm watching myself. Mm-hmm. And, like, hey, that was pretty funny. Like, when I was eating the burrito in the car, I think in the past I would have been like, you're so messy. Like, why are you such a mess? God.
Yeah.
And I was actually laughing. I had burrito falling all over my car. There's beans just, like, smeared on my seat.
Oh,
and I looked at it and was like, you're funny. That's funny. We're having a good time.
Yeah.
And I'm talking, when I say we, I'm talking about me and myself. So I find that to be really fun. Really good to have some humor with yourself and some just compassion. Like, I say very confidently that my undergrad years were way harder than my grad school years. Mm. Way, like, 10 times. So I hope that, you know, gives you a little bit of space to be like, whoa, I'm going through a hard thing. Cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are there ways that you have managed through? You're coming to the end of your time here, and I wonder if there's, like, one thing that you have taken away is like, this is a good way to cope or take care of myself.
To be honest, I'm still trying to find that myself.
Yeah.
But I guess one thing that has helped me is pretty much, I'm trying to think of what I do.
Yeah.
I guess it's just take time to put things into perspective. Because a lot of times I'll get caught up in the present, like what's happening right now. Like, I either think about things in the present, or I think of things 1 week in the future, 1 week in the past.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'll start focusing on, all right, I need to do this essay by next week, or I didn't do too well on that essay last week. And a lot of times I won't think of how much it does not matter what happens in the present affects or means in the future.
Yeah.
For example, I'm currently wondering if I should go to grad school, but I don't want to go to grad school right now. And
valid.
I'm just thinking, well, after I graduate, I should go to grad school. But there's been, like, multiple people I've talked to, both undergrad and in grad programs, that are started a lot older than I am right now.
Yeah.
Like, there are, I've talked to some grad students who have said that, yeah, this is my, like, second year in grad school. I got in when I was 31.
Yeah. If there is one recommendation that I feel confident telling everyone is to take a break. This is a hard, so, like, taking a break between undergrad and grad school. I took 3 years. I worked as a nanny. I hung out. I learned how to cook. I didn't know how to cook anything. I learned how to do, like, separate my laundry into whites and darks. Didn't do that in college. You know, I just took some time to, like, settle into myself a little bit more. So I totally hear you. And I really liked what you said about the perspective thing. a very common phrase that I have, I tell myself, is to zoom out and to just like look at things from a bird's eye view. And usually when I do that, I can breathe a little deeper. I can like relax. I can give myself like a moment. Because like you said, we get stuck in this like 3 week period. The week before, the week that we're in, and the week next, and everything else kind of like fades away. But if we zoom out, we look at all of the times that we've been stressed and that we got through it, and that we're on the other side, even if it didn't go well, right? So I really like that's a great one to come away with.
So I guess I just want to ask you, I'm trying to think of a question. Do you have anything that you want to say?
Anything that I want to say.
Or ask?
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoy talking to you. Leonard and I worked together throughout the year, so it's just been very nice to do that. I think I want to know, you know, since you're a philosophy major, how did, you know, mental health advocacy come into your life? What made you want to do PEP?
Oh, okay. I guess I've never answered these questions directly myself. The reason why I got into mental health advocacy was pretty much I came here my freshman year. At the time, I wasn't diagnosed with any mental illnesses. I didn't go to therapy. And I did the normal thing that college students do. They party, they do drugs, and all that stuff. And by my sophomore year, I was failing some of my classes. I was a computer science major initially. And basically, I just like couldn't handle it. Like there was just so much stress going on. So I dropped out and I pretty much worked for about a year. And then I went to community college back in LA, Santa Monica College. And by that time I was diagnosed with ADHD and depression and anxiety. And I was on meds. But I was also going through one of like the toughest, like depressive, like times, depressive funks that I've ever experienced, just because I felt like I was such a failure. And I was just like, if I was smarter, if I was better, if I was more studious, I wouldn't be in this situation I am now. And I pretty much, I guess I changed my major at some time in that time period, because I was basically asking myself, if I'm very miserable now, would working as a programmer feel a lot better than it is now? And basically my answer was, I like programming, I like computer science, but it's not something that I'm super passionate about. I basically got into the major because I wanted a job that was gonna be high paying. And then I just tried to figure out what I am interested in and am passionate about. And I remember taking a philosophy class in high school that was basically chalked up by my AP Gov teacher, because he was super into philosophy. And I really liked just asking those esoteric questions that don't really have an answer, but you can try to find one.
Oh, and that's literally therapy. I'm just kidding. Yeah. So in doing that, and you switched your major when you came here to Santa Cruz, and then
I basically switched my major when I was at SMC, and then I transferred back here to complete my degree.
Awesome.
But I basically picked philosophy because I just wanted to think about those questions in life.
Yeah.
And that's what I was interested in.
Yeah.
Because I've always asked those kind of questions, but I didn't know about all the different philosophers who've talked about their conceptions of how reality is, are the link between the mind and the body, and all of those things that are super interesting to me that computer science was not.
Yeah.
So even though I know it is not a STEM major that would get me a lot of money out of college, I still wanted to do something that I would actually enjoy doing.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
Good. And then
How I got into medical advocacy. And at SMC I was a part of the Active Minds group.
Okay, cool.
And basically Active Minds is sort of it's a national organization that basically does what we do at PEP, like works to destigmatize the conversation around mental health and help people educate people about the resources out there. And I initially joined because I didn't have any friends at SMC, and also I think I just wanted some place where I could be open about my mental health.
Yeah.
Because I was still in the place that I don't want to talk about it because I think it's something wrong about me. I think it's something negative. It's a bad trait that I have. And I wanted some place to go where I can just be open about talking about it.
Yeah.
And then that evolved into me talking about it. And then it finally evolved into now where I just don't care about talking about it.
Yeah.
I just see it as something that maybe can be seen as a negative, but I always can put a humorous spin on it.
Yeah, I really appreciate about your openness about that because I think I really relate in that it just feels like it's going on, it's happening to me, and I want people to be in connection with me around that. I know I felt more connected to you when you shared about your struggles, and I think that's what happens a lot of times is we think that people are going to be like, what? I don't want to hang out with them, or what's going on with them? But I think what usually happens is people start looking inward and they're like, me too. I don't feel so good either.
Yeah.
But I just want to shout out all the transfer students, anyone who had a really hard time in college, because I think I failed every class my first undergrad year because I started at community college too. And that is hard to deal with. It feels like I'm not gonna make it.
Yeah.
I don't know how I'm gonna ever do this. But I think like you found and what you told us in your story is like if you find something that you're really passionate about, it becomes a little bit easier and doable. And so when I found psychology, I was like, let's go. I love this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's always nice finding something that you're very passionate about.
Yeah.
And also, if you're very passionate about it, chances are you're going to gravitate toward it in the future. So might as well start it now.
Absolutely. Just one little like asterisk on that is that I think that's another thing I see coming up with college students is like, those folks who don't have that passion or don't feel that about anything. And so I just want to normalize also like doing something or majoring in something for the function of I want to make a living wage.
Yeah.
And then just like getting into whatever you want in your free time. But
yeah,
it's super cool. We both found our thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I figure I'm going to do in the future. It was either I get a job that I'm very passionate about that mm-hmm. basically fulfills my lust for life.
Yeah.
Or I get a 9-to-5 that pays the bills mm-hmm. and I do what I want to outside yeah. of the work. Mm-hmm. I either want to use, when I'm working, I either want to use 100% of my brain or 10%. Yeah. So I want to find a job that pays the bills that I can just use 10% of my brain yeah. and then go home and do work that requires yeah. 100%.
Yeah, and like read philosophers late into the night.
Yes.
Very cool. Yeah. Any other questions that we want to talk about?
No, I think we're starting to get to the end.
Okay.
And this is what I like to ask my mm-hmm. guests at the end.
Okay.
Do you have any words of wisdom that you want to share?
Words of wisdom. Okay. Yes. This is something that I've been playing around with quite a bit. And I share this with a lot of the students that I work with, which is I believe, me personally, that the point of life isn't to be happy. Like we're told so much, right? Mm-hmm. Like you just got to do what you're happy, what makes you happy, 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 happy. And the way that I have kind of reframed that is like the point of life is to feel everything that makes us a human.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, if you're feeling a lot of pain, yeah, you can get some support with that. But I'm trying to feel all of my emotions fully because that's what living is.
Yeah.
We can't avoid them. All of us feel sad. All of us feel shitty on certain days. So I'm really working with folks and with myself to reframe, like, do what makes you happy and just, like, do what makes you feel and notice the feeling.
Yeah.
So I think that's my words of wisdom. Yeah.
It's very good.
Yeah, thank yeah. you.
I don't know what to say about that because I definitely feel that. Mm-hmm. I have depression and I know that it's gonna be a pretty much lifelong
mm-hmm.
struggle
mm-hmm.
so there's no reason or I would find it unfeasible to try and like push that away
right
like, I'm only gonna be happy I'm gonna just be happy
right
there are some times where I actually want to be sad like
uh-huh
sometimes it's sort of a release like
yeah.
I'm gonna spend this time wallowing in my misery
mm-hmm.
and then I'm gonna get out of it
exactly so that's what that's exactly what it makes me feel too of like I get to be in all of my feelings fully mm-hmm. really and I don't have to say like this is a bad feeling this is yeah. a good feeling you know it's so much more complex than that
mm-hmm.
A good sad day in bed with like, you know, a bag of chips and TikTok, hell yeah. And also a good happy day where you're walking around in the sunshine, that's great too. Like
yeah.
it's all about just being human and letting those things happen. So it was so fun talking to you. I wish we could have an ongoing podcast, but this will be our last yes. one.
Thank you, Sophie, for Absolutely. Coming. And thank you everyone for listening. And if you want to possibly make this a continuous podcast, the PEP applications will be opening at the end of this month,
mm-hmm.
I believe May 31st or around that time. So there are many positions opening because I think a yeah. lot of the people in the PEP team are seniors.
Yeah, but yeah, there's a lot, yeah.
So there's going to be a lot of positions open. I think podcasting is going to be one of them, but mm-hmm. even still, there are a bunch of other positions that you can do mm-hmm. to pretty much advocate for your and everyone else's mental health.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's always a good thing.
Yeah, it is. It is. And PEP is really fun. So really recommend applying. Thank you so much, Lenny.
Yes, thank you for coming.
Yeah. Bye, All everybody. Right,
bye. Thank you for listening.